You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 10th episode of the Rejected Pre-Med Podcast, a space where rejection is celebrated. The podcast is truly all about showing how rejection is often redirection and it is not inherently negative. In fact, it can lead us to personal and professional growth and could be viewed as an opportunity. In today's episode, I'm very happy and honored to welcome Dave Robbins as our guest. Dave has been an occupational therapist since 2007. He not only worked with thousands of clients during those 10 years of practice, but he also spent 14 years caring for his own father after a severe stroke. Dave specializes in building deep connections and identifying patterns that hinder people from maximizing their physical and psychological function in their daily environments. He developed 3 years worth of curriculum for a course that assists people in opening their minds up to possibilities, that helps people recognize their blind spots and shift their mindsets towards an optimistic future. With this experience, Dave shifted from the public healthcare system into working with businesses and individuals towards mental wellness as a certified transformational coach, using choice and connection as powerful tools in thought. His book, with the working title Love Your Father, Heal the World, is in process for publishing. And Dave has a special offer exclusively for listeners of this podcast, so be sure to stick around until the end of the episode to find out what it is. So, Dave, thank you so much for making the time to appear on the show. I am very happy to have you on, and I'm very much looking forward to the wisdom you will bestow upon us in this episode. So can you first just start by telling me, how do you feel about doing today's episode?
Well, thank you. Let me first say how much I appreciate you welcoming on to your podcast, Valeria. I really appreciate it. I'm honored as well to be able to share this time with you. And I'm excited to see what comes up during our conversation. The last conversation we had was great. I think it was a great foundation for building a relationship that we built. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes from the questions you ask and being able to serve you and your audience as best I can.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. Yes, thanks again for being on this show. So my follow-up question for you. So you have been practicing as an occupational therapist for many years now, but in our first meeting, you shared with me that you didn't get into occupational therapy the first time applying. So can you share that experience with me again and the listeners and how you dealt with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not only did I not get in the first time, I didn't get in the second time either. So you know, I was in acting school when my father had his stroke. I previously had achieved a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. And then I traveled for a while, went back to school for acting. And then my dad had his stroke. And while I was wanting to be an actor, it was more important for me to support my family. So I dropped out of that acting program and I supported my dad for, as you said, a number of years. And while I was marketing this business to help people like him adjust their lives and their homes to these newly acquired challenges, somebody said that I really need to be an occupational therapist in order to be successful in my business. So I went and applied for the Master of Occupational Therapy program at the University of British Columbia. And I was so excited because I got an interview. And I went to the interview and it went incredibly well. They told me that it went incredibly well. They were very excited to have the opportunity for us to collaborate in education. And then I got my first rejection, which was that my GPA from my undergraduate degree was not high enough for them to allow me into the program. To say the least, I was disappointed. But I guess I had lived long enough and knew finally what I wanted to do enough that I could tap into my determination. And I went back to school and I took a number of counseling psychology courses, and I got between 91-98% in all of them. Was finally able to be a great student. Again, I think because I finally knew what I wanted to do with my life. And then I applied again, and this time I didn't even get an interview. And I thought, well, shit. What do I do now? So I was having a conversation with a friend of my mother, and she said, well, they don't know what they're missing out on. You should probably write them a letter to tell them. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. So I wrote this letter, and it basically said, hey, last time I got an interview, this time I didn't get an interview. I didn't even get an interview. Last time you were excited to let me in, and this time I can't even get in front of you to let you know how capable I am. And you haven't looked at how great a student I've become. I got between 91 and 98 in all my classes. And that should show you that I'm really determined to be a part of this program. And the letter worked. Got an interview. Did really well on the interview again. And then I got my next rejection, which wasn't a full rejection, but it felt a little bit like it, which was been put on the wait list. So what that meant was, like, you're good, but we can't really let you in unless somebody who we would prefer to get in there rejects us. But lucky me, somebody decided not to do the program, and I managed to get in. And I later found out that the interim head of the department actually really appreciated my letter. I worded it better than I spoke it just now, but it was obvious how determined I was and how capable I was, and how interested I was in becoming an occupational therapist.
Right. And how do you think that experience shaped your approach to rejection in general?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that it was a lot of things before that, like a lot of rejections before that, that actually shaped my capacity to not really be too heartbroken about all of it. You know, as an actor, there's a ton of rejection. I mean, you audition and you audition and you audition and you audition, and most people who audition land fewer roles than what they audition for, right? So there's no shortage of rejection there. And I remember meeting this one actor who told me that you can use the energy of potential rejection to show up in the way that you want to show up for yourself. So instead of feeling hard done by, or like angry, or really like the sadness of rejection, the hurt of rejection, I'm not immune, so I would feel some sense of disappointment, but I'd also feel you to show up with even more determination, enthusiasm, excitement thereafter.
Yeah. Wow. Acting to occupational therapy to becoming a certified transformational coach. That's definitely not a very linear, doesn't seem like a linear path, but it worked for you. And it's a great, because I didn't know you were in acting. I just learned that today.
Right. Yeah. We didn't talk about that last time.
No. It's great that you used that rejection as a fuel, and that advice came to you at the right place, right time. And then you remembered that and you utilized it, and it got you an acceptance into occupational therapy, and it led you to help so many people and continue to help so many people to this day.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. It kind of aligns with what you were saying that the whole podcast is really about. It's reframing that it's more like, instead of rejection, it's more like redirecting. And I think I really feel like that's what happened to me. I was in acting school. I feel like my dad kind of took one for the team. I wasn't meant to be an actor. I was meant to be an occupational therapist or transformational coach or some combination of those. And my dad had a stroke in order to prevent me from actually becoming an actor and from pulling me into this helping industry. That was like a sign of the universe. And then the advice that I got from that actor about how to refuel or be intentional about how I fuel or choose that rejection as fuel. And then my mother's friend who said, you should write a letter, right? And I feel like when we're not too caught up in what we think we're supposed to do, then we have much more available to us for following the signs of where the universe is steering us, right? And that's
for saying that. I needed to hear that today, I think. So thank you.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's redirecting. Rejection is redirection.
Yeah, and rejection is something we all go through. We just don't address it very often, especially in formal environments like universities or schools where everyone feels the pressure to succeed. And it doesn't always come at the same pace or in the form you imagine it to come to you.
Totally. I mean, people feel quite shy about speaking about anything that that indicates weakness or inadequacy. You know, particularly in the social media age, where you only see people's highlight reel, speaking about things that maybe don't paint you in what you perceive to be as the best light, those end up on the editing room floor, for example. And rejection is one of those things. It's part of what we've also created. And this depends on where you're from and what the culture is and where you're from. But we've created this emotional hierarchy, like happiness is way at the top. And sadness is kind of below what you would normally talk about. And particularly in Canada, anger is way, way out the bottom. You're only allowed to be angry in Canada if your hockey team is losing. Otherwise, you're not really like anger. We call it frustration in Canada. You don't even, we don't even say, oh, that's a bit frustrating for me. We even stick away from that. But, but sadness would be one that would be associated with rejection. And sadness, it's not preferred emotion. It doesn't have the same weight as people give happiness. Like happiness is the goal that you miss out on the depth of the human experience if you stick with happiness all the time.
Yeah. And as you're saying that, I remember the movie Inside Out. You watched that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's the message they were portraying. Like without sadness, happiness doesn't feel as happy because you can't fully appreciate happiness if you haven't been sad or down low, or can't fully be grateful because it's just adds to the fullness of the human experience too, and helps you be a more mentally healthy when you appreciate all the emotions that come with your mood or state or whatever life situation you're in. So yeah. And you kind of addressed this already, but I'll still ask this. Why do you think rejection can make us feel so bad? Like, why can it feel so taboo to talk about it? Even though everyone experiences it, we all know it, but we just don't like it. Why?
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, I'm not a behavioral biologist, but I mean, I've got some experience with from the people with whom I've had the chance to work. I think that there's a biological component to it, and that the biological component ultimately is one of survival. If you're part of the tribe, then you have people protecting you and helping feed you, and you're helping them and feeding them. And if you're not part of the tribe and you're on your own, then it's a lot harder to stay safe and be fed. So I think there's a component of it that's actually biological, where we fear our well-being if we're going to end up alone. And I think that that translates into more than it needs to now that we have a lot more information than we did when we were living in caves. But well, I think that that's a component of it. I think another one is that there's no manual or at least I haven't seen a thorough manual yet for raising children. And there's so many opinions and ideas. But, you know, when we are doing something that maybe our parents don't want us to be doing, and they react in a way that feels like it hurts our feelings, we start to associate rejection with like a removal of love. And we also, again, start worrying for our well-being, but also for our connection that we want to have with the people who we care about most. So I think we quite quickly start associating rejection with feelings of hurt, and also feelings of biological well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's no manual, there's not a lot of parents who are being incredibly supportive in that moment and saying, this isn't about hurting your feelings. This is about setting boundaries. This is about what's okay when you're a part of a team like this, and figuring out the pathways for us all to support each other in a way that maximizes all of our capacity and all of our value. And I mean, I'm saying this, but I don't know what potential results of this could be for kids moving forward. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily better.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
But it might help support people with not feeling as hurt by rejection, and right, recognizing that the rejection doesn't mean that they're not okay or that they're not good enough, that it's just part of life. Someone else's boundaries and what that's actually about and what that's for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, what you were saying reminds me of one of the episodes I did. Because often I emphasize the importance of leaning on your support systems when you're going either through rejection or other life setbacks. But one of the episodes actually cover what it means to actually support someone in a good way. Because yeah, you can lean on your support systems, but if your support system doesn't really fully know how to support you, like what not to say. And so it's very important to provide that support, and yeah, for kids to be raised with, for lack of a better term, emotionally aware parents, and how certain things, when they say them, how that can affect a child, or even with friends, like how something you can say can affect your friend, and being mindful of the words and that we use, and being mindful of how we support others. So I fully agree with you. And yeah, there's a biological component to it as well, because there's this aspect of social pain that you feel when you're rejected. And it's very important to have people by you who reassure you that you're still like, you're enough, you're still a good candidate. It's just, it's not personal. There's just other factors at play here. Something, not all things are meant for us. So saying things like that, I don't know, maybe there are better ways that you're the coach. Maybe there's other better ways to support, but that's something that would help me like to hear. But
yeah, I mean, I think you tapped into something that's really important there, and that's like knowing the person and being able to show up the way that they would benefit most from you showing up. And this is something that also we haven't really focused on super well in our education system, I don't think, and that's communication. Like, it's very hard for people to even understand what they need. So in your scenario, you said that you wouldn't feel well supported if somebody said, stop crying, suck it up.
Yeah, I mean, it might sometimes, but when it just happened to me, don't, like, it's just like in the moment, it's like, for example, like yesterday or today, I probably won't be beneficial to me.
Right. But you were never, also never taught to say to that person, you know what I could really use right now? Mm. I could really use you listening. And if you could support me through your words by saying things like, you've got this, I'm here for you. Would you like a hug? Do you want to go for a walk? Should we get some ice cream? Whatever it is, like, we also haven't been taught to really recognize how we're feeling and what we need, mm-hmm. but then to communicate that to others, right? And that really would help us help our friends help us.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's about having that clear communication, both sides.
Yeah. And communication with yourself too. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I really need here? Do I need somebody to tell me to buck up and get back at it? Or do I need somebody to just hold me and let me cry on their shoulder for 6 days and then take me out for ice cream, right? Like, what do I really need here? Mm-hmm. And getting to know yourself at that depth to really understand it. And then step into brave communication to be able to ask for it.
Yeah, I found that from my personal experience, the more honest I am with myself, the more honest I feel like I can show up for other people and be honest with them about what I need and how they can best support me. Based on your experience on working with many clients over the years, what advice would you give to someone struggling to overcome rejection and the feelings of shame that come with it? And I think I've asked you this in our first meeting, and you did say something about how the narratives we create in our heads, the language we use in our heads to define certain things, how that can help shape the trajectory of our lives. And for example, you can always say to yourself, oh, this is so difficult. This is difficult. This is difficult. Like, why do you frame it that way in your head? Yeah, sure. It can be tough, but at the same time, you can reframe it to say to yourself, it's easy. It just takes practice and you'll get there. May seem hard now, but it'll become easy later. So can you just elaborate on that a little bit? I may have butchered a little bit of how you framed it, but I want to hear your perspective on this.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it totally does. I mean, even your question itself has the opportunity to shift. So the question was, what advice would you give to someone struggling to overcome rejection? Mm-hmm. So you're picking up on it now. I could see by your face. So struggling to overcome, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. If you believe that you need to struggle in order to overcome rejection, well, then you likely will.
Right, yeah.
You likely will struggle. And overcoming rejection, I mean, I'm not sure whether overcome anything. My theory would be that we integrate so that we integrate the information we learn so that we can handle it differently in a future occurrence, right? So what advice would I give to someone who is practicing how to integrate their rejection story?
Uh-huh.
There's so many, but even just that, like watching your language.
Yeah.
One of the quotes that we talked about in our first meeting was Henry Ford's quote, whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. So if you believe that you can practice integrating your rejection story, then you can. If you believe that you can't and that you will struggle to overcome your rejection story, then that will be true. Right? So watching the language that you use to define your narrative. That's one piece. That's one piece that I would say. Another is, that if we use a mindfulness technique that I call stop, and I'm not the only one who uses this, but, it stands for stop, take a breath, observe your thoughts and emotions, and then proceed. It gives you a moment to reflect on those thoughts and emotions, and then again, pick a narrative that you want to have around moving forward. So do you want to continue to be, for lack of a better word, stuck in your programming or your program narrative? Or do you want to become an intentional author and author your own narrative moving forward? Like, leave it up to your programming or do it yourself?
That is so powerful, because I've heard of that concept before, but the way you brought it to our first meeting made me really reflect on that and think, well, even like achieving success, people say, oh, that's hard work. That's hard work. I'm sure it is at some points, but what if I say to myself, achieving success in my most authentic way and it'll be easy? Like, yeah. What happens? What happens if I do that? And yeah, I think that's so important. Like you said, choosing the language you use. And how about we can say, I want to be rich instead of I don't want to be poor. I feel like, because you're using the word rich, and that's the one that your brain remembers. For example, I'm just throwing out examples here. But if you keep repeating to yourself, poor, even if you don't want to be, but that's kind of, you always associate, or that fear develops of being poor because you don't want that. But what a fascinating concept that our thoughts really do frame the trajectory of our life. Scary and exciting at the same time.
Yeah, well, whether you believe it's scary or whether you believe it's exciting.
Here you go. It's exciting. It's only exciting. And you truly are responsible for your thoughts and what you think, because it all starts from those steps. It starts from your thoughts and it goes into your life.
So you said there that we're responsible for our thoughts, and I'm not totally convinced that that's true. Like, I don't even know where the origin of thought exists, right? Like, I don't know whether some great being is planting the thoughts in my head. I don't know whether they're coming from my experience. I don't know whether they're coming from some fruit that I ate in the morning. I have no idea what the origin of thought is I'm not even sure. Anyway, but we are responsible for our reactions and our responses to those thoughts. Because I definitely have some thoughts that pop into my head that are not ones that I want to act on. So I know that they show up. But maybe it's just that I wouldn't want to take responsibility for them.
Yes, no, you're definitely right. I like that version better. Our reactions and our responses to our thoughts are what help us shape trajectory of our lives. Can we leave it at that? Is that good?
Totally.
And you've sort of addressed this, but what are some effective tools or practices you have found to be effective for overcoming? Oh, here we go. Let me do this. I'm going to rephrase the question that I wrote. So it sounds language-wise, it's a bit more optimistic. Practices they have found to be effective to redirect yourself from your rejection. Is that bad? That's not grammar, but you know, either way, I think the message stays. You previously mentioned mindfulness. I think that's very important. Can you elaborate on that or mention some other techniques?
You bet. For me, it's really about learning to pick the right cherries. I think we talked about the cherry tree, right? That if we were to look at a cherry tree, and the cherry tree will have cherries that are ripe, and the cherry tree will have cherries that are rotten, and the cherry tree will have cherries that aren't ripe yet. And if we look at each one of those as though they're thoughts, we're not going to pick the rotten cherries because we don't want to eat them. We're not going to pick the cherries that aren't ripe yet because we want to give them a chance to ripen. And if we're picking the ripe cherries, which are the thoughts that are going to serve us best in supporting becoming the person who we want to become from this day forward, then we're picking the right cherries. Right? Let the rotten cherries fall. You don't have to pick them. We've all picked rotten cherries. All of us have had thoughts that, you know, aren't the best thoughts for supporting a future that we want. And we pick cherries that aren't ripe yet, and then we end up making mistakes, which are really just learning opportunities anyway, but we make mistakes. And if we take the time to pick the cherries that are the ripe ones, and we know that we can consciously do that, then we're living more intentionally. So our programming might keep us picking rotten cherries, or might keep us picking unripe cherries. But if we can take a second, use the mindfulness technique, stop, so that we can be conscious of which cherries are the right cherries for us to pick in this moment, then we can steer our life in the direction that we want it to go, rather than just leaving it up to our programming to do it for us.
Mm-hmm. And would you recommend, because I know for me, to keep track of my thoughts, it helps to do meditations. Journaling is also a great way to keep track of your thoughts, because sometimes you don't fully know how certain thought came about or what triggered that thought. Would you agree that those are good techniques to do or practices? Or would you have something to add? Because there might be people who are like, I don't know how to stop picking rotten cherries. I don't know how to do that. Like, where can they start?
I think that it all comes back down to deepening awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And there are endless practices for deepening awareness. So meditation is one. As long as you don't spend 3/4 of the time beating yourself up for not getting meditation right.
Right, yeah.
Which is also a common practice. The stop practice that I mentioned, implementing that, like pick something you do 20 times a day. And that might be walking through a doorway, going up and down stairs, petting a cat or a dog, changing gears on a bike, getting in and out of a car, anything you do 20 times a day. And in that moment, just practice stop. Stop, take a breath, observe your thoughts and emotions, and then proceed. And that'll help deepen your awareness. So if you need it in a specific situation, you've been practicing it so frequently that it'll show up for you. Not every time, but practice makes improvement. Journaling is another great option. Depending on what you're journaling about. If you're journaling about what you did with your day, then maybe less so than what thoughts did I have today? How did those thoughts affect me with my day? Was there anything that I would do differently? I know some people who do a climb in bed review. So the first thing they do when they climb into bed and close their eyes is they start from the moment they woke up and they review their entire day with as much detail as they possibly can. It's a great memory exercise as well, but it's also creates greater awareness of what you did and what you were doing and what you were thinking when all of those.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Things were happening. Some people will do that and then they'll ask themselves, what could I have done differently or what would I have done differently today? One of the things that we do in our household is we play Happy Crappy, which is like a version of Roses, Thorns, Bud. But basically, we talk about something that was happy from our day and something that was crappy from our day. And then we ask for consent to share. And if consent is given, then we can support the people with their crappies and what they can learn from the crappies that they've experienced. But again, it's just to bring people into greater awareness. Another practice is just square breathing. So breathe in for 4, hold for 4. Breathe out for 4, hold for 4, breathe in for 4, hold for 4, breathe out for 4, hold for 4. And that just gives you a second to basically, again, stop and then do some reflecting during that time. You might even be able to play some games. Pick your person and have a game that's like, how was your day? Great. How was your day? Great. Okay, let's get into it now. What worked really well for you today? And what would you do differently today? And it's, again, just an opportunity to dive deeper into awareness. And I know that people really like to gamify things. So
yes, it's fun.
Right?
It's you're learning and you're having fun and you're playing. And I think it's a win-win for everyone, for everything.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit, but not really, by moving on to the next question. So in your work, you help clients shift their mindset towards a more optimistic future. And you said using choice and connection as the tools and thought. Can you elaborate what you mean by choice and connection, and how can we use choice and connection to redirect ourselves from our rejection and other life's potential situations?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, you're doing really well with
thank you.
picking words that
this is great practice for me.
Yeah, it's brilliant. This is another way to do it. Create a script, review it, and yes. See how you can adapt it towards more of who you want to be in the future. It's not necessarily towards more optimistic. If you want to be more optimistic, then great. But I have the sense, like most people I know and that I've met, have no trouble beating themselves up in some way. Like the common thread is that there's an inadequacy story amongst people who I get to work with, and the inner critic can be at varying levels of audibility, but it's always there, right? So the idea is that. When you start using words like I get to rather than I have to, or when you use words on like opportunities rather than setbacks or challenges rather than problems, right? Then you start to overwrite the inner critic, or at least another voice in your head, one of your other voices, is louder. Mm-hmm. And we're all stronger when the critic isn't winning. So choice and connection. So let's start with connection. Connection, I think, is the foundation of safety. And if we feel safe, if we feel really, really, really safe, then we can go anywhere with anybody, right? And so that's the idea, is to build an incredibly safe container where people will have no possibility of a sense of rejection. For me, no, like the I guess the word is judgment, although judgment can be used in both a positive and negative way, but people generally feel some sense of being judged by themselves or by others. And I, for the most part, pull that out of my practice completely, unless my judgment is going to help somebody have a breakthrough. And then I'll surprise them by bringing it in, because most of the time, it's not there. And that's Rogerian psychology. His theory was one of unconditional positive regard. So if somebody is regarded positively by the person, again, finally they feel safe enough to reveal to themselves what's really going on. And that, I believe, is in connection. So connection is my number one tool. My number two tool is choice. And this is recognizing how we can separate our programming, shift around a few zeros and ones so that we can intentionally write our new program. And I'll explain this through a model that I believe we chatted about a little bit the last time. It's a model that I created called the Circle of Choice. And bear with me here. It's a little bit easier when you can draw it in front of you, but picture a circle with a dot in the middle. And that dot in the middle is absolutely anything that could ever happen to you. And now I'm going to put you standing on the top of the circle, and I'm going to put me standing on the bottom of the circle. And we're going to call that dot in the middle of the circle the birth of our first child. And you're thinking, wow, this is amazing. This is going to bring Dave and I closer together. I get to fulfill my biological purpose. I get privilege of raising another person and guiding them through the human experience. I get to feel the love and connection that can exist when I stare into another human's eyes when they've literally come out of my body. And I'm thinking, holy shit, how did this happen? I swore we used protection. How am I going to be able to communicate with her now? I had a terrible father. I've never changed a diaper. I can't even make enough money to support myself, let alone this other human. Now, which of those two stories is true?
I hope not the second one, but I hope I want to keep the first one. That's the more one I want to pick.
I'm glad that I put you at the top of the circle then, because that story is your truth. And the other story is my truth. right? And the reason that my truth differs in this situation from yours is because of my past. So on the outside of the circle, we would draw this beautiful hiking trail that leads up to my feet and a separate beautiful hiking trail that leads up to your feet. And those trails, most people would call their past, but I call it a programming. My programming has trained me to see the birth of my first child through a lens of panic. And your programming has taught you to see the birth of your first child through a lens of elation. Mm-hmm. And that all happens automatically. But we want to move away from automated thinking. We want to become the authors of our narrative rather than letting our programming continue to author our narrative for us. So using this mindfulness technique, stop, take a breath, observe your thoughts and emotions. In order to do that, I'm going to pull myself off of the circle. So I have a bird's eye view of the circle now. And an observation of my thoughts and emotions, my emotion is fear. And my thoughts were the ones that I mentioned, like I've never changed a diaper. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to take a second with those and be intentional about them, then I might think, okay, yeah, so I've never changed a diaper, but there's 8 billion people on the planet. How hard could that be? And yeah, Valeria and I have had struggle communicating, but we've never had something like this unite us before. And I've struggled to hold a job, make enough money for myself, but I've never been financially responsible to another human being. Maybe that's the kick in the butt I need to actually make the money that I need. And yeah, my dad was a terrible dad, but maybe that was the foundation I needed to be a better dad, or maybe even a good one. So I'm not going to put myself back on the circle where Valeria is, because I think in this situation, he's quite naive. But I'm not going to keep myself in the fear spot anymore. I'm going to put myself back on the circle in cautiously optimistic.
Mm.
Do you remember how many degrees there are in a circle?
360.
360 degrees. So we have 360 choices of how to see absolutely anything that ever happens to us, ever. Our programming is going to pick one. But that leaves 359 other options for us to intentionally choose in order for us to be the person who we want to be from this day forward, rather than remaining as the person that we've been all along. We can choose to remain that person if we want to, but now we're doing it intentionally rather than having our programming do it for us. So when we're rejected, that's the dot in the center. Your perspective is, oh no, I really wanted to be a doctor. And on the other side of the circle, I might be, oh yes, I didn't want Valeria to become a doctor because I'm going to lose her for the next decade. And both of those stories are truth. They're just true to the other people, right? But the idea of, oh no, I wanted to become a doctor is just one of your 360 choices. You have 359 others. And knowing that you've got that capacity and that power and now that knowledge and that tool, you get to pick.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful. Thank you. I don't even have anything else to add to this. I'm just absorbing as you're speaking. So I'll just let that sit at that. And thank you. Thank you for putting me in this situation, because it makes me actually be more absorbed into the lesson that you're trying to, or the idea that you were trying to portray. And yeah, so that was very beneficial.
I'm so glad. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. And I'm going to move on to the next question.
Sure.
But you worked with many people over the years who can feel all sorts of ways when they've experienced rejection. And without revealing their identities, if maybe you could share a story of someone or several people, their stories of how they, especially if they've initially felt not so good about it, if they've really beat themselves up about it, how did they change that narrative to the one that better served their future? And what can we learn from those people?
Yeah, great. Well, let me start off with saying that most of the people who I get to work with struggle in their relationships in some form.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always easy to be partnered, particularly when we haven't been super well trained in communication, like I mentioned. So people, when they get into some sort of disagreement with their partner, ultimately there's a form of, or a sense of rejection that's existing in that moment, in that argument. And I'm picking this one because it's so common. And I think that it would be valuable for your listeners. A tool that I offer there is a bow. Mm-hmm. And you just take the bow, this imaginary bow, and you place it on your partner's forehead when they're coming at you with their anger. Because if in that moment you can see all of the gifts in it, right? Gifts come wrapped in a bow. And the best gifts that we get in life don't come wrapped in a bow. They're usually the toughest, right?
Mm.
So if we can put a bow on it, we're empowering ourselves to shift out of our automated way of thinking, which is generally some form of defense. And we're recognizing that this other person is needing us right in that moment,
mm-hmm.
right? One of the gifts is that your partner is in distress right now. How can you show up for them? That doesn't mean you become a doormat, but it does mean that you shift your habit and you move it to something that's more intentional. So instead of moving into the habituated defense that you would do, now you're disrupting the pattern and moving more towards something that might represent who you want to be, which is somebody who shows up for their partner. A side benefit of that is that it usually pulls all of the anger out of it because the person's feeling supported, not every time, but it has that capacity, which also disrupts the pattern. And it's modeling maybe how you'd prefer to be treated if you're losing your shit yourself.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. So it's shifting away from the habituated way of thinking about rejection or needing to defend yourself from this aggression or anger, and moving more towards what is actually going on here, and how can I move toward my ultimate goal, which is probably not fighting.
Right. And this reminds me of a moment from a movie I saw, and I think there was the scene, and I don't remember the movie, but the line was said by Morgan Freeman, and I think he was playing God in that movie. I think it's about something about Noah's Ark, and he was saying something like, when you want to be kind, do you just become kind, or you get an opportunity to be kind? So when you want to be more supportive to your partner, you don't just bam, become suddenly more supportive. You get an opportunity for that. So you see that, like you said, they're angry. Like, imagine the bow. Like, that's a present. That's an opportunity for you to show up the way you want to show up. And if you want to be strong, sometimes life gives you situations where you'll become strong. And that analogy, that's what it reminded me of. But
yeah, it's a beautiful scene with Morgan Freeman, which is exactly that. Like, if you want to become more patient, God will deliver lots of opportunities to exercise your patience.
Mm-hmm.
I train you how to be patient. And I want to, like, again, just caution. The idea is not to set you up to get walked all over.
Right.
The idea is actually one of empowerment, where you're becoming in charge of your narrative rather than your programming just, again, pushing you into defensiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Wow. There's just so much that was said, and the wheels in my head are turning and just thinking and coming up with new things and new ideas and thoughts that would better serve me. And I got so much out of our conversation, and we are soon coming to the end of this episode. Do you have any last thoughts or main takeaways you have for anyone who's listening in?
I love that. And as a coach, it's a technique to, when somebody asks you a question, to actually reflect that question back to them. So I'm actually going to throw it back to you. Like, what are your main takeaways from this conversation?
Well, for me, I really like the idea of how our reactions and responses to our thoughts frame our life, pretty much. I find that so much goes from there, and having that awareness of your thoughts, and having that awareness of how you respond to those thoughts, and not being too hard on yourself when those thoughts are not the best. You can either pay attention to that thought, or, you know, replace it with another one that makes you feel better. Or when negative thoughts just keep coming for some reason, don't pay attention to them. It's always your choice. You have whatever situation you are in, no matter how it may seem, you always have a choice. And I think that's very empowering. And I would love to leave with that message almost, because we have the power in how we, what decisions we make, what choices we make. And I think that's very important for people to understand and to know.
Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. And you helped remind me of an image that that also helps me with thought analysis. And that would be like, it's almost like you're standing in a river and thoughts are in, well, like they are the water, and thoughts will just keep on flowing unless you get in their way. So if a thought that you would label as negative is flowing, it will just keep on flowing all the way through you unless you put up some sort of barrier where it then gets caught on you and sticks with you for as long as it sticks with you. So we have this opportunity, because I don't want us to like ignore the thoughts. I want us to see the thoughts, but then not give those thoughts any more value than what we would want to give to those thoughts, right?
Right.
These thoughts are part of who we are. They're coming up as a part of our human experience. But how much do we want to invest in them? How much energy, effort, time do you want to invest into these particular thoughts? Or do you want to just keep on flowing? Here you are. Okay, bye-bye. Oh, here's another one. Nope, don't like that one either. Keep on going. Oh, yes, there's one. Oh, I like that one. Maybe I'll hold on to that for a while. Here, I'll put it in my pocket.
Yeah.
Oh, there's another one I don't like. Just let it keep on going, right? And that's one of the ways that people have a tendency to meditate, is just this allowing the passage of thoughts to just keep on flowing through without judgment, and without blocking them, so that you end up holding on to them for longer than you may want to or need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you before I forget, could you please share the special offer you have for the listeners of this cast that you generously offer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anybody who would like an introduction to coaching, maybe they haven't had any coaching before, or even if they just like to see what coaching with me would feel like for them, I would be happy to gift you a 90-minute coaching session. To see whether we can help you be as intentional as you can be with your thought investment moving forward, or whether I might be a good match as a coach. So I'd be happy to gift you a 90-minute coaching session.
Thank you for that. I mean, sometimes I want to get a coach. I'm waiting for the moment. I don't know what I'm waiting for, but I'm waiting for it. And coaches, I think it's like having, actually don't quote me on this, maybe I'm wrong, but like having a coach, having a therapist, having someone with an expert lens can hear your story and listen to you and perhaps provide some guidance. Like you provided to me when you said, why should I label rejection as difficult? You know, it's maybe it's easier than I think it is. It's all about how I frame it and what I believe it to be. So yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And where can people connect with you and learn more about your work, including your upcoming book, Love Your Father, Heal the World? And I just want to hear what is the book about? And then you can address where can people connect with you.
Okay. Yeah. The book is currently about the journey that I took, the 14-year journey I took with caring for my father, the troubled relationship we had before, and the love that we were able to find in the care relationship, and how that really helped both of us heal to the point where we felt really solid in who we were. And from that secure foundation, how much personal development work I was able to do because I felt so secure in myself as a result of the love in our relationship.
That's beautiful. That event, stroke, which is in itself not very nice event, to put it in the least, but the fact that it led you to become more bonded with each other. And I would love to read that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the chapter... One chapter is called Stroke, and then in parentheses it says of luck, because ultimately this really traumatic experience led us both back to love. People can find me on my website, daverobins.com. People can find me on Instagram, Dave Robins. might be Dave Robbins Coaching. I think it's Dave Robbins. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook as Dave Robbins as well, and LinkedIn as Dave Robbins. I'm sure that there'll be those things will be in the notes.
Yes.
And you can just reach out to me, dave@daverobbins.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for joining me on this podcast in this episode. It's been an absolute privilege to hear your insights and learn about your journey as both an occupational therapist, as a son who cared for his dad, and a transformational coach. For many people, it is very easy to feel like, and I was myself one of those people, to feel trapped by rejection and let it define their paths. But as you have kindly shared, rejection is not the end. It is a redirection. It is a chance to reflect, grow. We can use it to redirect ourselves to something even greater than we could have ever imagined for our paths. And Dave has provided invaluable tools for navigating life's setbacks with resilience and mindfulness, emphasizing the importance of reframing rejection as an opportunity and paying attention to the narratives we create in our minds. Listeners, I would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. I would love to learn what resonated with you the most. Feel free to DM me on social media or suggest topics for future episodes. And if you'd like to support the podcast and the content I create, you can also donate at buymeacoffee.com/Valeria Rusnak. The link for that will be in the show notes too. This has been Valeria Rusnak, the host of the Rejected Pre-Med Podcast. I thank you all for listening.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.